This is Edge Cases, a podcast about the grumpier side of software development, mostly, but not always, Apple-related, featuring myself and my co-host, the Hall & Oates of Objective-C. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
This is episode 54. It's Saturday, June 29th, 2013. And our topic this week, well, Wolf, you're going to hate it. So can you guess, just for me saying that, can you guess what it's going to be?
Licorice.
So I have air quotes going on here. We're not a topical show.
Okay. So iOS 7?
Yes. So WWDC.
Oh, okay.
So yes. So I also agree that we're not a topical show. We don't cover the weekly news as other podcasts do. But when I say cover, of course, I mean complain about. And in terms of complaints, it is just too rich a topic to ignore. I think. Mm-hmm. I think we can.
Well, the entire non-topicality, if that's a word, our show. I mean, it's kind of, you know, a happy accident type stuff. You know, we just had a list of things we wanted to talk about, and you know, the news of the day wasn't really persuasive enough to. It definitely was pervasive enough, but wasn't persuasive enough to really. You know, alter our course for what we want to talk about. Right. But, you know, when we do have, you know, major things that is very rich vein, again, I'm fine with covering topical stuff.
Sure. Good. So next week I'm going to talk about, if I had a joke handy, I would be able to be like, oh yeah, next week we'll talk about, but I can't think of anything. So that's why
we're not a topical thing. Yes.
You're right. That's why we're not a topical show.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to start with, a quote about lawyers. There's a quote about
Rumsfeld. Say that.
I don't. Maybe. Some people have attributed this to Alan Dershowitz, but it's been proven that it was from before he could have said it.
Okay.
So if the facts are on your side, pound the facts, and if the law is on your side, pound the law, and if neither is on your side, pound the table. So in our case, because the NDA from Apple. That I'm under anyway for WWDC severely restricts what we can talk about. First, I'm going to pound the NDA.
Okay.
All right. So, Wolf, why would you say Apple has an NDA on the content of the conference?
Man, you know, I'm a dub old timer, right? So yeah. I remember when they actually would show off like the next version of, well, back then, you know, System 7, System 8 type stuff. And this is something that you might get a Macworld article or a Macweek article later on. But, I mean, this was definitely like beta bits that they did not want you to talk about. And it was very hush-hush. And, you know, back in those days, I pretty much agreed with it. But, man, now that, you know, these $100 accounts, I think even like free online accounts might even be able to see the dub videos, it seems to not really provide any purpose whatsoever now. And I mean, it used to be that like at DubDub, like Apple would say, well, please, you know, don't actually talk about this. And they do like put that in slides. So actually, now that I think about it, I don't even remember seeing those in slides the last couple of years. But it probably just on the fine print I hadn't noticed. But it was
they tell you when you get your badge,
okay,
that everything is under NDA except the keynote. Actually, the woman who talked to me said everything, including the NDA. Including the keynote was under NDA, but I'm assuming she misspoke.
Now you're in big trouble.
Yeah, right. But yeah, you were saying?
Oh yeah, but I already lost track. So but anyway, go ahead.
Well, certainly one of the reasons why the big reason why Apple keeps anything secret and does not give you lots and lots of information in real time or month to month is because they want to make a big splash when they do announce things. They want the rumor mill to go up. They want anticipation to go up as they go. And it's certainly been successful for them. They've gotten a lot of press for the things that they do. And I also know that I did hear people occasionally saying that internally as well, that it was something, you know, this is not an accident that they're doing this, right? Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I've heard, which comes more into why they would put everything in the WWDC under NDA, is... And this isn't something that I've heard from Apple, but I've heard from other people, is this idea that, well, they don't want it to get to like competitors, you know, they want a competitive advantage from, you know, from keeping it secret. And that's certainly the one that is, yeah, I mean, you laugh about it. It's pretty crazy. I'll tell you a story. So when I was at Apple, and I guess they don't do this exactly anymore. They still send out pictures of the conference. Like they'll have little pictures that they send out of like various little vignettes, you know, somebody helping somebody else, somebody, you know, people in line or whatever. But when I was there, when I was at the labs one day, actually somebody came by and took a picture of me helping somebody. And it actually, you know, kind of my 15 minutes of fame, they put that up on the website as sort of the hero picture at the, mm-hmm. and the banner at the top. Me and all my flabby, pale glory. And, you know, it was a really cool picture. It really gave you a sense of what the conference was about. But it turns out that before they took that picture, the guy who I was with had just pretty much admitted, yeah, I'm here from, you know, it might have been Nokia. It was one of the competitors. And this was a couple of years ago. So it might even have been Palm. Although I don't think so. And Samsung, was Samsung a big competitor back then? Anyway, one of them, you know, he came in and he basically said, you know, I'm here to do Oppo research. I'm here to find out what you guys do for the sake of my employer, who's a competitor of yours. And, you know, I didn't hear that and say to this person, oh my God, go away. I will tell you nothing. You know, I did my job because no one had actually told me not to do my job for that. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, that doesn't help to keep this out of competitors' hands. All they have to do is sign up for an account like anybody else, and they're going to get every single bit of information that the rest of us developers do. So even if other people are saying, well, that's the reason for Apple to do it, I mean, if it is the reason why they do it, it's a really stupid reason. And so I kind of doubt that that is it, actually. Now, what it does do, though, so it doesn't, it's like DRM in a way. Like, it doesn't help to prevent the, you know, the people you don't want to have it from having it. It prevents the people you do want to have it from having it. Okay? Yeah, okay. Title. So it seems that if that's, you know, so then it kind of becomes, well, if that's true, then the only reason that they're doing it still is that way to make a big splash, to keep, and actually even more than that, to keep control over the media. Because while this information may be out there and anyone basically can get it, what they can do is they can tell media organizations, no, this is under NDA, you can't write this story. Mm-hmm. And they'll pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. Whereas kind of everyone else won't really pay attention to it. Like if you look on Twitter after the conference or during the conference, and there were a variety of people tweeting about all the stuff they found in the iOS beta, in Xcode 5, things like that. Apparently there were quite a few screenshots. And that led to tweets like this. So do you know who Patrick Burleson is?
Yeah, I do.
Yep.
Bit Barbecue, right?
What?
Bit Barbecue?
No, his Twitter handle is PBurr.
Right, but his company is Bit Barbecue.
Oh, okay, sure. So he tweeted at one point, do you guys violate your other NDAs with such abandon as you do your one with Apple? Mm-hmm. And somebody else tweeted, and I didn't catch that particular tweet, I didn't write that one down, but they said it would lead back to the bad old days of not having access to seeds at all. Mm-hmm. So developers would see the stuff at the same time as users. And do you remember, was there a time when Apple did that, when they just didn't give out betas at all?
I seem to remember this happened a few times with Mac OS X, where it's like I seem to remember it was like maybe 10.3 or something, where maybe it wasn't 10.3, but yeah, I do distinctly remember that there was a few times where we barely got any preliminary access whatsoever.
Okay,
but that was a one off, or maybe a one and a half off.
Okay. I don't remember that myself. I'm not saying that it didn't happen. I'm just saying I don't remember it. I would have expected that would have happened more in the bad old days before OS X, when mm-hmm. Apple was under different management.
Right.
Certainly, it doesn't make any sense for them not to give developers the chance to do stuff with it. I don't really think that's going to happen. One of the things that comes through for me is that no one's ever been denied an account, for example, for leaking, for tweeting about things which they shouldn't have. Apple just doesn't seem to pay any attention to it at all. And it, you know, if they thought it was really important, I would think that they might crack down on it. I think they don't think it's important. I think they know as well as we know that they're throwing developers under the bus for the sake of their promotional efforts, and it's not actually all that important if we say something about a detail here or there. It's just that they can't find their way to both control the media and give us what we want.
Hmm.
I think, you know, they do try to give developers ways to communicate amongst themselves with the dev forums, devforums.apple.com. Right. It's just that they're not very good ways to do it. Mm-hmm. So they're aware of the problem, but they're not willing to really help us with it more than they help themselves. And that's kind of a recurring theme, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk about WWDC. It's not just going to be iOS, so I'm going to talk a little bit about OS X, and if we have time, I might talk a little bit about actually the Mac Pro too. All going back to the theme. Just a little bit about OS X. I hate the name, right? Do you like the name?
I was kind of waiting for you to say the name. I was going to make fun of you.
Well, the name is Mavericks. But I do like the style, because they were basically... They were in a really bad situation, right? They, as they said in the keynote, they ran out of cats, and they ran out of cats at an inconvenient time, because they ran out of cats at a point where they weren't ready to do a major new release. They weren't ready to go to Mac OS 11 just yet. So they just changed the rules. No biggie. And, you know, I like that. I like that they were just saying, okay, you know what? We're just going to change the rules. There are rules. Screw it. Of course, there was one cat name left, one big cat name. Do you remember what it is?
I believe you even mentioned this on the show before, but no, it escapes my memory.
It's a cougar.
Oh, right.
So
right.
It's pretty clear why they didn't want to use that as the name of the next name of their OS. So, I did like, you know, the little joke about sea lion, like I would love to call it sea lion. But the picture and in the thing where they talked about sea lion was not a sea lion. It was a seal. You would have thought they would be less sloppy than that with OSN. Also, after Sea Lion, I propose Ant Lion, right? I think there's lots of things you could do for that.
A little sidestep in there, yeah.
But in any case, for OS X, what's interesting to me is that a good portion of what they consider to be the OS X progress, because they did talk about it quite a bit in the keynote, is pulling things in from iOS, pulling back in things, like backporting things to OS X. Maps, for example, iBooks.
Mm-hmm.
And also, another thing that was interesting is the features that have been taking them two major revisions to get right, like full screen support.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of us were so annoyed when they introduced these new full screen capabilities of OS X that they didn't give you good multi-monitor support. And now they have. And I think they showed that off in the keynote, as far as I'm aware. So Apple has a tendency to ship things kind of half-finished and tout it as a feature when they finally get to the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey, that's so great. Yeah. We did this. Yeah. Well, yeah.
2-4-1, right?
Yes. So, and in a completely unrelated news, iOS 7. So a bunch of articles, and the nice thing about getting to this a little later than everybody else is that there have been a bunch of really great posts about it. There are people talking about it on other podcasts, that sort of thing. But I'm going to focus on two of them. One is Marco Arment's post called iOS 7 as Defense, which I'll put a link in the show notes for. And he makes the case, as I will be repeating, I guess, that a lot of what happens for this, a lot of what they put into iOS 7 was a reaction to what other people were doing. So they want to, they like the good old days when iOS was more ascendant, and they want to get back to that. They want to, you know, as he said, it's a power move, one that I think Apple still has the power to pull, but just barely. Because, you know, what have they done? They said, well, now here's all these things you have to do to keep up. And Marco kind of says, well, the point of, he sees one of the points of that, I think I would agree, that it's to keep people's focus on iOS. When in fact, you know, Android is certainly still growing market share, I believe. Or, you know, if not this month, then, you know, previous months. It has, I think, in, you know, I've seen some figures where like iOS is 30% and Android is, you know, more than that, possibly like double that at this point. I'm not quite sure. Mm-hmm. But certainly a significantly higher percentage of people are buying Android devices than they're buying iOS devices. And, you know, Apple, and they're coming out with things that Apple wasn't coming out with. So this was not Apple saying, we're going to start fresh. We're going to do things new just because we can. This was them specifically reacting to somebody else and trying to get back in the game. And so another way to look at this is an analogy that John Gruber with Craig Hockenberry on the talk show, show 46, Close Encounters of the Seventh Kind, they mentioned, and I think they mentioned that someone else mentioned it, but they were repeating it, that their analogy was iOS 7 as Aqua.
Mm.
And for those of you, my God, would there be anyone listening to this podcast who doesn't know what Aqua is? Aqua being the name for the OS X UI, which was a stark refresh, a stark change from the UI of the previous macOS release, macOS 9. And it was introduced, again, as a way to get attention, to refresh things, to make people excited about it again. And there's a bunch of interesting things about that analogy that is basically the rest of what I'm going to talk about today. One of them is, if this is what Apple wants to change things, wants to refresh things in such a way that it will then carry them forward. And I believe Gruber also said at this point, you know, he said this is what they're doing for the next, they're setting up the base for the next 10 years, right? And what my reaction to this was, another bit of information that we generally all have now about this iOS version is that they kind of rushed it, you know, they kind of had to do it after Forstall was kicked out. Mm, so right. They had, you know, if my math is right, if other people's, what I've heard is right, you know, they had about 7 to 8 months to put this together before the conference, which is, you know, as people keep saying, well, that's not very much time.
Yeah, especially when you consider this the sheer amount of man hours that it takes to go through each and every app and make it look like the new look.
Very different, right? Basically, you know, as they said, reconstruct it basically from scratch. I mean, these could be considered basically new applications.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if this is supposed to be the basis for, you know, everything going forward, you know, the new infrastructure, the new bedrock of iOS, you know, why rush it in 7 months? And what does that mean for us as developers trying to build our stuff on top of this hastily constructed bedrock? But it goes even further with this, because when I talk about iOS 7 being a defensive move, what people may not remember is, of course, Aqua itself and OS 10 was a defensive move. And macOS was further in decline than iOS has been. Now, some people might even argue that iOS has not been in decline. I would say it's pretty clear that, you know, iOS needed some rejuvenation. iOS was having some competitive troubles. So, you know, Aqua and by extension OS X was very similar in that same. They were in the same point in their career, even if a little bit more dire. But OS X was not their first attempt during that previous time period to get developers on board with a new direction. And what was before OS X? Wolf?
Oh, are you going to consider the Rhapsody stuff? Or are you?
Yep. Okay. Yep. Because when you think that Apple is pushing their developers for iOS 7 to do rewrites, to do major changes to their applications, Rhapsody was, you know, the granddaddy of telling your developers to do lots of things just to stay on the treadmill, right? Just to stay in the same place you were at before. Because with Rhapsody, what they wanted you to do was convert your apps to Cocoa, because they didn't call it Cocoa at that point, immediately, you know, to go from your old version of your app to a Cocoa app. And again, if you weren't around at that point, this was a huge deal because no one was programming in Objective-C back then for macOS. We were publishing against the Toolbox, which is a C API. We were publishing in C and C++, and I guess Pascal, if you really felt like it. It was a huge change. And what happened at that point was Apple said, hey, everybody, you know, rewrite your apps from scratch. And everybody said no. Or at least the big guys said no. Microsoft, Adobe, you know, they said, hey, you guys don't have the market share to make us compel us to spend all this time just to get an app that does the same thing that did before. You know, no, we're not going to do it. And what did Apple do in response to that? Excuse me. Apple blinked. They said, okay, we won't make you do all of those steps. Now, we're still going to make you do some steps, but the whole thing about the rollout of OS X was in some ways a way to take a compromise, to take this sort of okay, you win scenario and spin it to their advantage and say, okay, you know, we're going to still do Coco, but we're going to do the two other boxes as well, which is, right, classic.
Mm-hmm. Carbon.
And there is actually an analogy to carbon, analog to carbon. Excuse me, mm-hmm. not carbon. Classic here. I'm screwing up my intro here. Okay, carbon I'll get to in a second. But classic, there is actually something similar to that in iOS 7. And, of course, because of the NDA, I probably, you know, technically mm-hmm. I'm not supposed to mention it, I guess, because it's behavior that I saw as part of seeing the beta. But if you were to run your old app on a machine that has iOS 7 on it, you'll see what I mean. And I guess okay. we can talk about it more when the thing goes live. But yeah, so what's left out of those three boxes that Apple introduced in OS 10 is carbon, is the compromise, is the way to tell developers, well, yes, you're going to get a good portion of the good stuff that comes with this new OS without having to rewrite your app from scratch. And I think it makes a lot of sense that there is no carbon this time around because the power dynamics have shifted.
Mm-hmm.
Apple really doesn't have these must-have apps, at least in quite the same sense. They don't have must-have apps from companies that are already so far in another camp that they just won't consider spending a lot of time on iOS. The companies that are on iOS right now are in deep. They're in for real, I guess. I don't know how to phrase it. So Apple still has the leverage right now to say, put all this effort into it. But I think what's interesting, and I don't remember exactly who said it. It might have been in the talk show. It wasn't in Marco's article. Maybe it was somewhere else where they said, oh, no, he did say it. Power to pull off, but just barely. I think the interesting thing about this is Apple saw the problems, saw that it was in a bit of a decline, and their reaction to it was not, okay, hey, let's work with our developers to get the next great thing out. Their reaction was let's put a squeeze on our developers for the sake of having our platform be better. And that's, I'm putting it in a bit of a severe way, in a bit of a inflammatory way. I know that. But I do think that that's a legitimate way of looking at it. I think they said, let's use that leverage that we still have today that we might not have in 6 months, and let's just push it to the hill.
Oh, really? You think the timeline was as short as 6 months?
It's probably... that's what you latch onto. I would say certainly within 2 years.
Yeah.
That they probably couldn't have gone another year, and they certainly couldn't have gone two more years while continuing to do what they're doing. And you know, you look at this and you say, well, this is, you know, they're pushing the developers to do this stuff. They're kind of not giving you an option, but this is what they've done to iOS developers all along, you know, with the store. Okay, you've got to follow our lead and put up with us not telling you much and all this other stuff, or else, you know, take a hike. With what else? Well, certainly the store is a big part of it. And so the thing that, you know, the thing that I've been pounding the table about, I guess, for the last however many episodes, is that I'm really curious what Apple, how Apple is going to handle losing, how Apple's going to handle decline. And I think, you know, this WWDC was interesting to me because it gave me the answer to that. And it's not that it was a surprise, but it might be a bit of a surprise in the chutzpah involved, in the fact that they just pushed it so far. They put so much on their developers with this when, I don't know, I guess it's mostly just a question of nerve, really. Because we already knew that that's what they like to do. That's how they like to push things ahead, is like to make changes such that it falls on their developers to do it. Anyway, so that's, let's see, what else do I have here? Oh, well, the funny thing about this, though, is if you continue to look at this analogy, which is really kind of all I have to talk about in this episode, maybe we'll wrap up early. Who knows, maybe we won't, is that OS X didn't actually put the Mac back on top.
Right. And that's an important lesson to take to heart here.
It is, right? So it was interesting in the keynote, Apple has made kind of an art form of cherry picking exactly what statistics they want to tell you about in their keynote. Because, of course, they want to make it look like they're on top and they're the best in everything, when, of course, they aren't. And I believe that they used to give more stats for the store and more stats for phone usage that was absolute, where they said, you know, we have this many number and they only have that many number. And, of course, most of those numbers anymore don't make them look anywhere near as good. The Google Store is basically catching up in number of apps downloaded. Of course, Google is you know, has more activated devices, everything else. So they've got to fall back to things like, you know, internet usage. And actually, it was really funny how Tim Cook did that. You know, he really pounded the fact that, like, ooh, you know, we've got more people using our devices, and therefore, you know, we're winning. And yes, it's true. But it's also, it feels a bit like illegalism. Because they're using devices more, but if trends keep going the way they're going, the way that Google has expanded, then even that won't be true eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in any case, one of the numbers that they gave, let's see if I've got this correctly, is that OS X, that Macs have doubled in 5 years. That there is now, I think, double the install base that there was 5 years ago. And, you know, they compared that against the PC growth rate. But you noticed one thing that he didn't say. He didn't say that they were selling more Macs than they're selling PCs. Because, of course, that's never been true. And if you look at it by that rate, well, all of this wonderful growth that they've experienced is still just a drop in the bucket compared to PCs. And so that may happen again. It may be that this pushes iOS back into a bit of the limelight. It gives them a bit of a bump. And things are better, but that still doesn't take care of the fact that they're in a minority now, and they may be in even more of a minority in the future. And so we still don't get to see yet what Apple's going to do when that really hits, when they really can't force people to do stuff anymore. The other thing that's interesting to me is, again, so many people in sort of our sort of social circle and the websites we visit, the Mac and iOS intelligentsia, they were focused on how much things had changed with iOS. But nobody that I've read, anyway, has kind of asked, will it work? It seems like the idea is, well, my God, it was so big of a change. Of course it'll work. It seems like that's the assumption a lot of people make. But we only have to look at another recent example of something to see that it might not, which is Facebook Home. Because Facebook Home was also this case where they said, wow, you know, they just put great people on it, and it's this new, elegant, innovative thing that we haven't really seen before, and it's a challenge, it's something unusual. And you know, for like 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, that was kind of all I heard about Facebook Home. Is that, wow, this is great, this is new, this is elegant, great. And then we got the sales figures coming in about, I think it was the, there was a phone that one of the manufacturers was making.
Yeah, it was an HTC or something.
HTC, right. And, you know, so that was their big thing, that they were going to sell phones based on the fact that it had this thing, Facebook Home, installed by default on it. And so everybody thought, well, at least it's going to make some sort of a splash. And then it didn't. And I was actually surprised as anyone. I'd been hearing everyone talk about it. It's like, wow, you know, innovation will be rewarded. And it was, so it was really kind of a shock when it wasn't, when suddenly it seemed that the conversation turned from, wow, this is so original, to, oh yeah, of course it failed. Which was a bit, you know, it seemed like it was the same people suddenly saying, well, of course it failed. Like, no, not of course it failed. Well, you know, for one, okay, yes, things fail. But if you were so sure that it was going to fail, if this is sort of validating your assumptions, why weren't you saying anything during the whole thing? Why didn't you even bring that up? Mm-hmm. And so it really kind of, if this is kind of the hive mentality, you know, we'll see. Will Apple actually start selling more phones because of this? And, you know, because that's really what it comes down to. You know, everybody says market share doesn't matter. You know, screw it. Market share does matter. It matters a lot. It matters to Apple, and it matters to their competitors, and it matters to developers. And, you know, what happens if everybody puts all this effort into making their apps work like the new iOS stuff, only to find that they put all this effort to again, basically stay where they are in a market that's not doing so well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that's pretty much it. It's about 30 minutes here. One last thing though that I wanted to mention was that, you know, I talked about Apple features where it takes them two releases to get it right. You know, if there's any version of iOS that's going to take two releases to get it right, or maybe three, it's going to be iOS 7. It's going to be the changes that they're making in iOS 7. And again, it comes back to OS 10. You know, people were saying that all of the things were introduced in like 10.0, but they didn't really become usable, for example, until 10.2, that people, that it was the newness was there at the beginning, but practicality only came later. And when you look at things like Dan Weinman in his blog, Venomous Porridge, which is a great name for a blog, as far as I'm concerned, he's got a blog post called Look and Feel from this month. And he talks about affordances. Have you read this?
I have not read that, so I'll have to catch up on that.
Put that in the show notes. And it really opened my eyes, because he was kind of saying that the things that Apple has taken out of the design, you know, and the fact that buttons are now don't have any borders or anything, that all of the hints that were there to tell you what to do, that not all, most of them are gone or really backpedaled now, and that Apple introduced these things saying, well, now it's time to grow up, now we don't need them anymore, now we can just let the content shine through. And what he was saying here was that, no, you need those things because we're human beings, not because they're stylish, but because we're human beings. And human beings really need these hints to give them the sense of how to use things. And if you don't have those hints, our brains are just not wired to be able to figure it out otherwise. And if something like that is true, again, I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but if something like that is true, you may have a basic fundamental flaw in iOS 7, in the ideas behind iOS 7, that they're just, that these new ideas from Apple just aren't going to catch on because of humanity, because of the way we do things, the way we think. And if that's true, then, you know, people may turn away from it, or Apple may need to, which I already covered. So the second part is Apple may need to do some serious modifications to it.
Sure.
And if they do, and yet you've just spent, as a developer, you know, 3 months rushing around to get all your stuff to look exactly like Apple stuff did, then you could be in a lot of trouble. And this is more important, I think, because while Apple does give guidance as to how to do things, in a lot of ways that guidance is not, you know, it's not a book. It's still very simple, the things that they tell you to do. So what a lot of developers do is they say, well, all right, we're going to take our cues from the apps that Apple has. And, you know, Apple has, you know, on their website right now, you can go look at it. They've got, you know, movies of what, you know, calendar looks like, what mail looks like, what contacts look like. And so people are going to take their cues from how they look today. And while I do think that anyone expecting a big change in how things act from, you know, from today until when it ships, they're probably going to be disappointed. You know, anything could happen. But by the time they get to beta, Apple's stuff is usually pretty well fixed. I think that's probably true here as well, that you're just not going to see giant changes. But they still may say, okay, but we're going to, you know, we're going to iterate pretty heavily in coming OSs. And so anyone who's really copied things slavishly will be in trouble, because they'll have to keep changing things. They'll have to keep running on that treadmill to get it to happen. And so, you know, that's not great. So there's a lot of things to be concerned about, as far as I'm concerned, with iOS 7. There's a lot of areas of risk that I think have been underplayed by people when they talk about, you know, all the newness of it and all the things that are exciting about it. So I figured I would be that, you know, that bucket of cold water that you need after all the excitement has passed.
I like it. Yeah. So a couple of thoughts I had along the lines of what you're talking about is that I am very concerned about kind of the newbies using the phone. I did do that blog posting. I think it's actually still at the top of my blog, but about my mother trying an iPhone, and even it was, you know, iOS 6 and all the little problems she had with it, and that's exactly, you know, iOS 6 should be at the point where it has a level of polish where, you know, if you take a very long time to slide to unlock, and you make it, you know, past 95% of the way there, it should actually still work, even if you back off two pixels, that type of stuff. I mean, that's the type of polish you would expect from a version 6.0 of any piece of software, really. And by them going in this bold new way that they're going, yeah, it's going to be really rough. And sounds like I'm in Wyman's camp, where I am very worried about the affordances being lost. There, someone posted a it was like a YouTube video or something about a baby, you know, being given.
Yes.
Oh, you saw this? Yes.
Do you have a link to that?
I have a link to that. I'll give it to you.
Okay.
So we'll link to it. And this, you know, you give the baby an iPhone or an iOS 6. And this baby probably, I'm really bad at aging babies. That sounds brutal. like roasting them or something to the peak taste or something.
All right, setting that aside, probably, I mean, at least, you know, under five, certainly.
Yeah. And, you know, this baby was able to totally slide unlock and start going to town, pressing buttons. And then it puts the iOS 7 beta iPhone in front of the baby, and it's just like, didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I wonder if the baby had already been exposed to the iPhone and had so could unlock it through practice, through seeing other people do it. I don't know if the video makes that clear.
Mm-hmm. Good point. But
yeah, I mean, it was a funny moment, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the other thing is that in terms of the success of iOS 7 in general, it's kind of weird because, you know, Apple's doing this brand new thing and going off this new direction. But we're not going to be able to judge it on its own merits. We're not going to be able to control our scientific variables here, that because it's going to be coupled pretty much with the release of the next iPhone. And, you know, who knows what crazy new features they'll put in the iPhone 6 or 5S or whatever they're going to call it. Because that will – it will be kind of – the success of both will be mixed together. So it's, and but of course, the iOS, what they're doing with iOS transcends a single device rollout. So it will be with us for many years, where the iPhone 6 will just, you know, be old news in another year. So it will be hard to know whether or not they actually chose the right path and whether whether this was all for naught. I think it, in general, yes, it needed a refresh. I have very serious concerns about the usability. And, you know, for me, Apple has always been the kind of the platform of we are not the gearheads. We are for normals. We are here for people who
Muggles,
use
tech. Yes.
We're here to to create technology that helps normals have better lives. And with this type of aggressive redesign of it, I know why they're doing it, and I'm worried that it kind of, like, will look at it and in our little, you know, very technological bubble, and we're like, oh, I can use it. It's not a problem. But really, for the masses, for the people who aren't actually programmers and working actually on Ryan software, or the gearheads, that this is a dramatic step back. But it'd be one of those things where the users end up blaming themselves. That, like, oh, this is kind of confusing, but I guess I'm just not good at phones. You know, like they used to say, I'm not good at computers. When, you know, when on the old iPhone model, the iOS 6 model, it was, it's definitely clunky, and I have a lot of problems with iOS 6. But, you know, what was great about it is that there were no gestures. I really liked WebOS, and however, it was gesture heavy. And I myself had, when I picked it up the other day, and I forgot what gestures I should use. I'm like, oh yeah, the bottom of this thing I can actually touch. Yeah. And yeah, so I do like those buttons that look like buttons and stuff like that. And I fear that, much like I mentioned this analogy before, that it used to be in the old Aqua guidelines that everything was kind of, you know, like you'd have a sourceless view, and then you have the detail view, and they'd be separated from each other for, you know, by a good number of pixels. And that way, each view, when it had focus, could draw the little blue highlight around it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it'd be clear if you're pressing the up arrow or down arrow, that if you're, are you going up in the source list? Are you going down in the detailed list? Right. And for aesthetic purposes, we end up kind of taking away those margins and kind of jamming things together without addressing the fact that those highlights, those subtle indicators of where focus is, that they were just never put in again. And the usability suffered for it. I still, you know, randomly end up typing someplace that I thought I didn't know focus was there, and there's no visual indication of that. And, or at least the visual indication is sufficiently subtle that I didn't notice, and I'm pretty attentive on pixels of my screen. So if I'm missing it, then I feel really badly for normals who have to use the software rewrite. And I feel that this could be very analogous to iOS 7, where it's going, where it's all very whiz-bang, and we will very quickly acclimate to it, and we'll kind of say, well, what's the problem? And it will be a big problem for users. That said, I don't know if it will actually even have a market impact, because it seems like users don't actually buy based on usability, which is quite sad.
Yeah.
But that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah, I mean, we would have hoped that Apple wouldn't be actively making it worse, though. And also then, you know, it means that if you want to be a designer who's doing good work on iOS, that you may have to actually go against the ways Apple says to do things and make your app different for the sake of making it better, which is, of course, making it different is also making it worse, because then if you act differently than everyone else, then they may be confused even if your way is better, which, exactly. You know, again, is sort of the whole Mac versus PC thing. But okay. But it's we'll have to see how it goes. I mean, again, you know, Apple is not full of stupid people. Mm-hmm. One would hope that if they make, but they are in a bubble. It's interesting you mentioned being in a bubble. I mean, Apple is totally in a bubble in its thinking. And they do best when, what's the best way to put it? They do best when the ideas already in the bubble are the right ideas. Because then they're not so influenced by other bad ideas out in the rest of the world and the rest of the industry. And you know, things like for example, have I told the story before? The translucent menu bar, right? That was introduced in whatever, Leopard or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was introduced, and you know, you couldn't turn it off. Like, you were stuck with it when it first came out. And there was actually a giant like an email thread or something within Apple of all these people saying, "Oh my God, there's all these cases where it looks really bad, where it doesn't, where you know, you can't see things in it. Things are obscured. Things look bad. They act badly," and it was all just ignored because the idea, you know, again, they didn't say anything, but my idea was, my impression is that they just, you know, they just said, "No, we're right. We want it. We're going to do it." And it was only when they got negative feedback from the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. That they actually put something in there later on to say, you know, okay, we'll let you turn it off. So one hopes that if there are things where they're really going in the wrong direction, if they get a lot of feedback from users saying, "No, we really don't understand this," that they'll change directions. You know, and that's kind of the best you can hope for at this point, I think.
Yeah.
And of course, that has downsides again, because developers will have to switch again. They'll have to, you know, curve around again to match the new direction. But I guess, you know, it's better than not fixing the stuff that needs fixing.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess on that cheery note, because, you know, we always want to end on an up note
when
we do this stuff. All right. Where is my little spiel here? Do I need, can I set the spiel off? And no, here it is. Please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com. All one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. And we'll see you next time.